Today is Monday, the 3rd of November, and this is Kathy coming to you with the Sunday edition of the Herald and Review. Military Gold Star families shine through holiday trees in central Illinois. Christmas trees can bring about different feelings for Gold Star families. That hurt and that grief continues for a long time, especially during the holidays, says Gold Star mom Frances Maddox of Bloomington. They have an empty seat at their table during the holidays. Gathering together with support from other America's Gold Star families, Maddox helped hang special ornaments honoring her son and other service members who had died during active duty. The ornaments can be seen on the Fallen Heroes Trees of Honor tree on display at the Decatur Civic Center. Our community is spread all over, said local Gold Star mother Teresa Palmer, who lost her son, Private Logan Palmer, on August 21, 2017, aboard the USS John McCain. Marlene Van Matra traveled from Bahama to help decorate the tree. Her brother, Specialist 4 Michael H. Flood, was killed in 1969 in Vietnam. I come every single year, she said about the tree displays. Why shouldn't I? Because there's a lot of families that aren't able to. We're honoring our fallen. Peoria's Riverfront Museum has a similar 14-foot tree on display, while Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington has a 9-foot tree, and the Decatur Civic Center has 2 9-foot trees in the lobby. Since the first tree was displayed in 2017, the dedication has grown, encouraging organizers to add the second tree. We continue to get more ornament requests, said Maddox, chair of the Fallen Heroes Tree of Honor. According to Darren Funk, executive director designate, a fourth tree will be decorated for the first time in the Kankakee community. Funk became a member of the Gold Star family when his cousin Benjamin Disletz died in 2007 in Iraq. Our family is extremely close, he said. Dave Van Matra hangs the higher ornaments for the Fallen Heroes Trees of Honor tree at the Decatur Civic Center on Saturday, November 1st. And there's a picture of him up on a ladder. It looks like he just put the star on the top of the tree. The trees are designed to bring awareness to the community, Maddox said, so we can continue to provide that honor for our fallen and healing for our Gold Star families, she added. Maddox's son, Anthony, was killed July 22, 2013, while serving in Andar, Ghazi province in Afghanistan. The Bloomington family has their son's star on the hometown tree as well. Museums and municipal buildings were suggested as the ideal locations for the holiday trees, and airports because that's typically the last place we see our hero, Maddox said. And there is a picture of lots of stars with names on them and red, white, and blue ornaments. And Marlene Van Matra helps decorate the tree on display Saturday at the Decatur Civic Center. Although the trees are designed to honor the fallen and their families, organizers know they need the community's help. There's quite a bit of community engagement, Maddox said. We can't do this project without the community. The Decatur tree has approximately 500 ornaments on display, ranging from the Civil War to current active duty losses. The stars at each one of the locations are made differently. The Peoria tree has pictures of the fallen on the star. Bloomington stars are made of wood, and Decatur's stars are made of acrylic. Each star has the name of the service member's rank, branch of service, date of birth, and date of death. Several of the stars are duplicated and hung at other tree locations. Illinois service members are represented, with a few extras from other states. The whole premise around these trees is to keep their names alive, Maddox said. America's Gold Star Families is a nonprofit organization. As Funk explained, when a service member enters the military, the family is represented with a blue star. The star changes to gold when they have lost a loved one during the active duty. The Fallen Heroes Trees of Honor represent the fallen heroes across the country with the unique ornaments. The only way that we're able to do this is by donations from the community, Funk said. America's Gold Star families also offer grief counseling services and scholarships and send birthday cards to the children of the fallen. We send those out every month, Funk said. We also have a potluck at the holiday time for the families to come together, Maddox said. When the holiday season is over, the ornaments will be taken down and hung up again next year. But then we always add ornaments based on requests. To learn more about or to donate to the America's Gold Star Families, you can visit the organization's website. This is all one word, americasgoldstarfamilies.org. This next article says, uncertainty over federal food aid deepens as the shutdown fight reaches a crisis point. And this is by Stephen Groves, Ali Swenson, and Susan High from the Associated Press. And there is a picture of some managers of a grocery store. El Recerdo Market Manager Celia Benitez Wright sets up banners Friday that read, EBT accepted here in Los Angeles after two federal judges ordered President Donald Trump's administration to continue funding the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program known as SNAP during the government shutdown. From Washington, the crisis at the heart of the government shutdown fight in Washington were coming to a head Saturday as the federal food assistance program faced delays and millions of Americans were set to see a dramatic rise in their health insurance bills. The impacts on basic needs, food, and medical care underscored how the impasse hits homes across the United States. The Trump administration's plans to freeze payments to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program on Saturday were halted by federal judges, but the delay in payments still likely will leave millions of people short on the grocery bills. It all added to the strain on the country, with a month of missed paychecks for federal workers and growing air travel delays. The shutdown is already the second longest in history and entered its second month Saturday. Yet in Washington, lawmakers are away from Capitol Hill, and both parties are entrenched in their positions. The House has not met for legislative business in more than 6 weeks, while Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, closed his chamber for the weekend after bipartisan talks failed to achieve significant progress. Thune said he hoped that the pressure starts to intensify and the consequences of keeping the government shut down become even more real for everybody, that they will express, hopefully, new interest in trying to come up with a path forward. The stalemate appears increasingly unsustainable as Republican President Donald Trump demands action and Democratic leaders warn that an uproar over rising health insurance costs will force Congress to act. This weekend, Americans face a health care crisis unprecedented in modern times, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York said this past week. The Department of Agriculture planned to withhold payments to the food program starting Saturday until two federal judges on Friday ordered the administration to make them. Trump said he would provide the money, but wanted more legal direction from the court, which will not happen until Monday. Benefits already face delays because it takes a week or more to load SNAP cards in many states. People are just nervous and scared, said Jill Corbin, the director of the St. Vincent de Paul Soup Kitchen and Food Pantry in Norwich, Connecticut. It's not really a definite answer that we have right now. As people lined up early Saturday for hot meals and groceries, the organization had 10 extra volunteers to help newcomers navigate the process. On Wednesday, about 400 families visited the food pantry and 555 people received hot meals. The SNAP program serves about 1 in 8 Americans and costs about $8 billion per month. The judges agreed that the USDA needed to at least tap a contingency fund of about $5 billion to help keep the program running. That left some uncertainty about whether the department would only provide partial benefits for the month. The Trump administration needs to follow the law and fix this problem immediately by working closely with states to get nutritional assistance to the millions who rely on it as soon as possible, House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said after the ruling. Democrats demanded this past week that the government fund SNAP, while Republicans blamed the Democrats for repeatedly voting against a short-term government funding bill. We are now reaching a breaking point thanks to Democrats voting no on government funding, now 14 times, House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, said at a news conference on Friday. Trump late Thursday suggested that Republican senators who hold a majority end the shutdown by getting rid of the filibuster rules that prevent most legislation from advancing unless it has the support of at least 60 senators. Democrats used the filibuster to block a funding bill in the Senate for weeks. Republican leaders quickly rejected Trump's idea, but the discussion showed how desperate the fight became. The annual sign-up period for the Affordable Care Act health insurance also began on Saturday, and there are sharp increases in what people are paying for coverage. Enhanced tax credits that help most enrollees pay for the health insurance plans are set to expire next year. Democrats rallied around a push to extend those credits and refused to vote for government funding legislation until Congress acts. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, spoke on the Senate floor this past week about constituents who she said face premium increases of up to $2,000 a month if the credits expire. "I'm hearing from families in my state today who are panicked," she said. "The time to act is now." If Congress does not extend the credits, subsidized enrollees will face cost increases of about 114%, or more than $1,000 per year on average, healthcare research nonprofit KFF found. Some Republicans in Congress were open to the idea of extending the subsidies, but they also want to make major changes to the health law enacted while Democrat Barack Obama was president. Thune offered Democrats a vote on extending the benefits, but has not guaranteed a result. He demanded that the Democrats first vote to reopen the government. T.J. McCain, whose family owns and operates farmers markets in Mesa and Apache Junction, Arizona, said 15% of the market's customers use SNAP benefits. He was not assuming the delays would immediately hurt the business, but added, "Hopefully this isn't a long-term problem, because once these benefits run out, then it's going to start to hurt." Also on the front page, this article from the Capital News, Illinois, written by Peter Hancock. Illinois school report card continues to show wide achievement gaps. The first school report card issued under Illinois' new revised scoring system shows higher student proficiency rates in English, language arts, and math, but continuing disparities between racial, ethnic, and economic subgroups. The 2025 report card shows that more than half of all students, 52.4%, scored proficient or better on English language arts exams, but only 38% met grade level proficiency standards for math. Those numbers are based on standardized tests that students from third grade through high school took in the spring 2025 semester. They reflect a new scoring system the Illinois State Board of Education approved in August that established new benchmarks for proficiency. Illinois' previous benchmarks for English language arts proficiency were the most restrictive in the country, resulting in the mislabeling of high-achieving, college-ready students as being not proficient, State Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders said during a media briefing on the report card. This meant that the students who were succeeding in school, passing advanced placement in dual-credit courses, taking leadership roles within their schools, enrolling in college, and still being labeled as not proficient on our state assessment. The change in scoring systems was expected to result in more students being classified as proficient in reading and math, but fewer in science, and that is what happened. In 2024, only 39% of students who were tested scored proficient or better in English language arts, and only 28% did so in math. On the science assessment, which is given to 5th and 8th grade students, the proficiency rate dropped from 53.1% in 2024 to 44.6% in 2025. But Sanders said the 2025 scores cannot really be compared with previous years because the year-over-year changes are mostly the result of the new scoring system, not a change in how well students performed. However, he also said there were other indications that student performance did improve in 2025. They would have increased if we had kept the same cut scores, he said. However, we changed the cut scores, so we can't tell you what they would have been, but we know they would have improved. All states have issued report cards since the 2002-03 school year, when they were mandated by the federal law known as the No Child Left Behind Act. They were intended as a tool to hold districts and individual schools accountable for bringing all students up to a level of proficiency in reading and math and for improving their high school graduation rates. That also meant closing the persistent achievement gaps between racial, ethnic, and economic subgroups of students. But the law also gave states flexibility to establish their own standards for proficiency and to develop their own tests to measure student performance. In Illinois, most students in grades 3 to 8 take the Illinois Assessment of Readiness for English Language Arts and Math. Students in 5th and 8th grade also take the Illinois Science Assessment. At the high school level, 9th and 10th grade students take the pre-ACT Secure Exam. High school juniors and some high school seniors take the ACT with writing, which includes tests in English, math, reading, science, and writing. In Illinois, the 2025 report card shows there are still wide gaps in proficiency rates between white, black, and Hispanic students in both English, language, arts, and math. Among fourth graders, for example, 55.4% of white students scored proficient or better in math, compared to 28.8% of Hispanic students and 17.4% of Black students. Among 8th graders, two-thirds of the white students, 66.6%, scored proficient, compared to just over one-third, 36.7%, for Black students and 45.4% for Hispanic students. The 2025 report card also includes data for the first time for a newly categorized ethnic group, Middle Eastern or North African, abbreviated MENA, in the data files. Among MENA students, the 2025 report card showed a 53.9% proficiency rate in 4th grade English language arts and a 42.3% proficiency rate for 8th grade math. One area where Illinois has made progress in closing achievement gaps is high school graduation rates. In 2025, the statewide four-year graduation rate reached a 15-year high of 89%. That was up 3 to 4 percentage points from a decade earlier. But the rate was also up across all demographic groups, and the gap between these groups narrowed significantly. In 2015, a four-year graduation rate among white students was 90.2%. That was 14.7 points higher than the Black graduation rates, and 9.5 points higher than the rate for Hispanic students. In 2025, the graduation rate for white students inched up to 92.4%, but it also rose among other groups. As a result, the gap between white and Black students narrowed to just 9.5 percentage points, and the gap between white students and Hispanic students narrowed to just 6 points. Sanders gave credit for much of that improvement to the evidence-based funding formula, which lawmakers passed in 2017. That law called for adding at least $300 million per year in new funding each year to the state's K-12 education budget. Since then, Sanders said, Illinois has added more than $3 billion in EBF funding to the budget, with the bulk of that money targeted toward the least funded school and earmarked for things specifically designed to improve student outcomes. Districts have used these resources to expand interventions like summer school, he said. They've added mentoring, credit recovery courses, transition programs for English and math, and they broadened access to career and technical education, advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and dual credit. These opportunities keep students engaged and on track for success. The report card also contains data on several other measures of the state's education system. The number of full-time equivalent teachers working in Illinois reached a new high of 137,899, an increase of 687 from the previous year. The teaching workforce also became slightly more racially diverse, with 21.1% of them classified as non-white, compared to 20.4% last year. But total student enrollment decreased slightly to just under 1.85 million. Chronic absenteeism declined for the third consecutive year in 2025, but still remained high at 25.4%. Students are classified as chronically absent if they miss 10% or more of the days in a school year, regardless of whether the absence is excused or not. The rate shot up during the COVID-19 pandemic, reaching a peak of 29.8% in 2022. And from Logan County, a Taste of Lincoln food truck lot to open in Logan County. A Taste of Lincoln food truck lot is set to open next week at 603 North Kickapoo Street in Lincoln. The concept is the brainchild of Tim Brady, who is an owner and partner for Brady's Painting and Construction. Brady said he was inspired as his wife Wendy runs Lou's Sugar Buzz, a drink trailer offering coffee, energy drinks, lemonade, shaved ice, slushies, and dirty sodas. Wendy and their son Cody were involved with creating the food truck lot as well. It's a way for people to try something out and see how it goes, Brady said. He said he's talked to a lot of people in the area who have well-liked dishes they like to make for family and friends, but owning a restaurant can be quite costly. But with the new food truck lot, they will be able to experiment without brick-and-mortar commitment. We have a couple of trailers and spots you can rent on the lot as well and test the water, so to speak, Brady said. Try a couple different dishes to see what people think about it, giving everybody a shot to try something and bring something new around. The grand opening event for A Taste of Lincoln is planned for 11 a.m. Friday, November 7th, weather permitting. There will be a ribbon cutting, and then the food trucks will be opened up and ready for service. Brady said the food truck lot is a sort of the same concept as going to a mall food court and having multiple options to choose from. Confirmed food trucks from the event so far include T&D's Catering, Lou's Sugar Buzz, The Daily Wrap, and A Taste of Lincoln Food Truck. Other food trucks like Baked and Loaded and Sensational Treats might make an appearance too. Brady said they are accepting vendors who want a spot on opening day and beyond, and those interested do not have to be based in Lincoln to get involved. Prices are not set in stone, Brady said, but those who are interested in trying out the lot can rent a spot and bring their own trailer Monday through Thursday for $200, $300 for Friday through Sunday, or $450 for 7 days, or a monthly rate of $1,000. Those who need to rent a trailer and a spot can do so for $550 Monday through Thursday, $600 Friday through Sunday, and $1,000 for 7 days, or a monthly rate of $2,000. Brady said they will also offer discounted prices for those who only want to park for a certain day and want to set up a tent, which wouldn't take up as much space as a truck or trailer. All of the trailers they rent have passed health department and plumbing inspections, Brady said. They do not have grills or fryers, but they are set up for warmers and have full power and water, he said. I'm hoping people will want to come try out different stuff, hoping to see a wider variety of options to drink and eat, and different people, vendors, to see if they can make it and be successful, Brady said. Everyone's kind of excited simply to have something different. I hope it's a good turnout for everyone involved. I just want it to be successful and more people to know about it and come try it. The more support we can get, the better, you know. Keep up with the food truck lot by searching A Taste of Lincoln on Facebook. Those who are interested in participating or would like more information can contact Brady at bradypainter611@yahoo.com or at 217-605-0272. Trump's favorability falls among Hispanics from the Associated Press. President Donald Trump's favorability has fallen among Hispanic adults since the beginning of the year, a new APNORC poll shows, a potential warning sign from a key constituency that helped secure his victory in the 2024 election. The October survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds that 25% of Hispanic adults have somewhat or very favorable view of Trump, down from 44% in an AP NORC poll conducted just before the Republican took office for the second time. The percentage of Hispanic adults who say the country is going in the wrong direction has also increased slightly over the past few months, from 63% in March to 73% now. The shift could spell trouble for the Republicans looking to cement support with this group in future elections. Many Hispanic voters were motivated by economic concerns in last year's election, and the new poll shows that despite Trump's promises of economic revitalization, Hispanic adults continue to feel higher financial stress than Americans overall. Hispanic voters made up 10% of the electorate in 2024, according to AP VoteCast, a survey of interviews with registered voters, and the number of eligible Hispanic voters has been growing rapidly in recent decades. Alejandra Ochoa, 30, is a warehouse worker in Adelanto, California. He identifies as a Republican and voted for Trump last year, but he's now unhappy with the president. He criticized some of Trump's budget cuts, adding that the cost of groceries is too high and buying a home is still unattainable for him. He was kind of relying on essentially the nostalgia of, hey, remember before COVID? Things weren't as expensive, Ochoa said. But now it's like, okay, you're in office. I'm still getting done dirty at the grocery store. I'm still spending an insane amount of money. I'm trying to cut corners where I can, but that bill is insanely expensive. Hispanic voters shifted toward Trump in the last election, though a majority still backed Democratic Kamala Harris. 43% of Hispanic voters nationally voted for Trump, according to AP VoteCast, up from 35% in the 2020 presidential election, which he lost to Democrat Joe Biden. But the poll now finds that Hispanic adults are slightly less likely to approve of Trump's handling of the economy and immigration, two issues that were major strengths for him in last year's presidential campaign, and their views of his overall presidential performance has slipped a little as well. In March, 41% of Hispanic adults approved of the way Trump was handling his job as president. That has fallen to 27%. Over the past few months, Hispanic communities have also been a target of the president's hardline immigration tactics. The poll found that Hispanic adults' approval of his handling of immigration has declined slightly since March. Some see the two issues as linked. Trump's attacks on immigration have affected low-wage and high-skilled workers alike at a moment when the economy is already uncertain because of his erratic trade policies. Fel Eshande of Winter Haven, Florida, is a beloved behavioral specialist who identifies as a Democrat, but sometimes votes for Republican candidates. He said he appreciates Trump's views on transgender issues, including restroom access for transgendered women. But he's concerned that Trump's immigration policies leave many people living in fear, with negative effects on the economy. A lot of people rely on immigrants to do labor in certain areas, Eshande said. When that gets affected, all prices go up. Our food costs more because the cost to get people to do that work. The poll found particularly high levels of financial distress among Hispanic adults compared with the rest of the country. More Hispanics say the cost of groceries, housing, and health care, and the amount of money they get paid are major sources of stress compared with U.S. adults overall. Views of Trump have even soured a little among Hispanic Republicans. In the latest poll, 66% of the Hispanic Republicans said they have a very or somewhat favorable view of Trump. That's a slight shift compared to an AP NORC poll from September 2024, when 83% of Hispanic Republicans viewed Trump at least somewhat favorably. About 8 in 10 white Republicans had a favorable view of Trump in the new poll, which was unchanged from the year before. And another potentially worrying sign for the president, younger Hispanics and Hispanic men, two groups that swung particularly dramatically toward him in the last year's election, also see him a bit more negatively. About two-thirds of Hispanic adults under age 45 and Hispanic men now view Trump unfavorably, according to the new poll. That's a slight uptick from September 2024, when about half in both groups had a negative opinion of him. Other concerns about Trump's chaotic second term emerged in interviews. Teresa Covarrubias, a 65-year-old school teacher from Los Angeles, feels things are going in the wrong direction and said she was troubled by how some of Trump's actions have defied norms and may impact social safety net programs. My major concern is the disregard for the Constitution and the law, and then also the level of cronyism, said Covarrubias, who is an independent voter. The people at the top are just grifting and taking, and then there's the rest of us. There are signs in the poll that Trump's tough immigration approach may be alienating some Hispanic adults. Over the past few months, the president has doubled down on his pledge of mass deportations, with escalating crackdowns in Latino neighborhoods and cities, including Chicago. The poll found that, in general, Hispanic adults are more likely to say immigration is an important issue to them personally. About two-thirds of Hispanic adults prioritize immigration, compared to with about 6 in 10 white adults and about half the black adults. And although their views on immigration enforcement aren't uniform, Hispanic adults are much less likely than U.S. adults overall to favor deporting all immigrants living in the U.S. illegally. About one quarter of Hispanic adults support this policy, the new poll found, while roughly half of them are opposed and the rest don't have an opinion. Among U.S. adults overall, about 4 in 10 favor deporting all immigrants in the U.S. illegally, while 34% are opposed and about 2 in 10 don't have an opinion. Rick Alvarado, 63, a Republican who lives in San Diego, says he still supports Trump and praised his actions to cut public spending. Alvarado, a property manager, is behind Trump's immigration crackdown in cities including Los Angeles and Chicago, saying he believes some immigrants are involved in organized crime. But he added that he would like to see a solution for those without criminal records to obtain legal residency status. The people who are productive should have a pathway to stay here, somehow, Alvarado said. And that's all of that article, and that's about all we have time for today, in part one. We'll be back with part two in just a few minutes.